you are listening to Punk News Podcast episode 538. We got a lot of wackiness to cover, and we're going to open with some sadness, I'm afraid. But let's go.
It's a dollar or two. Just tell me how many for you this time. This time. This time. This time. Sex packets, the girl of your dreams. Just try one, it's not what it seems. This love. This love, this love, this love. Now it's just sex and a
pill. And welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. Breaking news, quite sadly, Shock G of Digital Underground, one of the greatest hip-hop groups of all time, has passed away at age 57. News literally broke about 10 minutes ago. On Chopmaster J's Instagram, and now it's on all the sites. Chopmaster J was one of the original Digital Underground guys. Shock G was an amazing, amazing person, an amazing, amazing musician. If you don't have the first Digital Underground record, Sex Packets, you have got to get it. It is one of the greatest hip-hop records of all time. Top 10 for sure. Shock G himself was extremely talented. He was a rapper, but a producer and a piano player. And actually, he was like the youngest DJ on FM radio at like age 15 or something in like the early 80s. He was almost kind of like a savant. And I think he was one of these guys that was kind of cursed with, like, he was so naturally talented that he never had to try. And so after they had the first big hit, he kind of, I guess, had trouble getting beyond that just because he never had to try before. Like, a lot of gifted students have this problem. They don't have to try in middle school. They don't have to try in high school. They don't have to try in college. Once they get out of college and have to actually compete, it's difficult because they never had to try before. That's just my analysis, but an amazingly talented musician, a very weird guy. And so RIP Shock G. Sam, Hallie, M, does anybody have anything about to say about Digital Underground or maybe not?
I mean, just that I have great memories of listening to Digital Underground when they were popular, but I can't, you know, I didn't like follow or like stick with this band. I mean, 57 is too young to die. That's terrible.
Yeah. Well, Shock G had a lot of issues, especially, I mean, he talked about them openly, especially later on. And also, when you don't have a whole lot of money, then all of a sudden you have tons and tons of money, that can cause problems, you know. So I saw Digital Underground once. It was actually one of their last shows ever. Even like, they broke up and they kind of got back together here and there. So I don't know if it was the last show or one. It was pretty cool. I think it was Yoshi's in San Francisco, and it was for the Tupac's 40th or 50th birthday celebration or something like that. And Tupac's dad was there and George Clinton was there, and it was Digital Underground. I think Money B was there, one of the other main MCs in Digital Underground, and it was really cool. So I'm glad I got to see Digital Underground, even though it was kind of after they broke up but sort of got back together. So let's just play some Digital Underground. Their big hit, of course, is the Humpty Dance, and an amazing, amazing song, but I'm not going to play that because everyone's heard that. Let's play something that's not super obscure, but I'm going to play one of, I guess, the shows that are more artistic side, if you will. You know, I think Humpty Humpty Dance is a very artistic song. Let's play, should we play All Around the World the same song, or Rhyme on the Funk, or let's see here. Somebody talk about how great the Humpty Dance was while I decide what Digital Underground song I'm going to play, and then we come back and we will do the show proper.
The Humpty Dance was amazing, amazing song. Video, so strange. I remember there being like some prosthetics involved, right? Like a prosthetic nose situation going on in the video.
I know what song I'm going to play, but Hallie Bullet, the famous line in Humpty Dance, "I once got busy in a Burger King bathroom." Amazing line. Sex positivity that we enjoy, or objectification of people that we don't need, or both.
I mean, listen, have sex in a Burger King bathroom, you know, as long as all parties are like down and excited about that, go for it.
One thing, and there's many great things you can say about Digital Underground, but starting in the 90s and then going on, even before, that's when we really got a lot of the objectification in hip-hop of women, which continues through to this day. And I'm always astounded when they talk about, guys like, how's his name? The guy that put out the Red mixtape, I can't remember his name. One of the little guys. Or about, who's the guy with the colored hair and the teeth that was like the worst dude ever? Or extension, you know, absolutely horrible objectification of women and just meanness. One of the wonderful things about Digital Underground, a lot of sex in their songs, never any objectification or putting one party above another due to their sexual adventures. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Isn't there a little bit of like being down on like ugly girls or fat girls? Isn't there a little bit of that in that song?
No, I'm going to play the counter. Absolutely not, and here's why.
Okay. I could be wrong.
There's a song where he's like, he's like, it doesn't matter if you're fat, look at me, I'm skinny, and never stop me from getting busy. I think it's Freaks of the Industry.
You're right.
I'm pretty sure we're going to play Freaks of the – I think that's the song, Freaks of the Industry, unless it's The Way We Swing, but I think it's – or is it Rhyming on the Funk? Whatever song where Shachi raps about, it doesn't matter if you're fat or skinny or ugly or you don't take a bath, you are entitled to all the dignity that a human should have. That's the song we're going to play. I think it's
– I love that you have all these lyrics just ding, just like right at your disposal. They are like right there at the front of your brain. That makes me so happy.
Anyway, people, go out and buy – Freaks of the Industry, I mean, the album Sex Packets. The other albums are pretty good, but Sex Packets is amazing. Check it out. This is Digital Underground. We'll be right back.
Stop what you're doing, cause I'm about to ruin the image and the style that you're used to. I look funny, but yo, I'm making money, see? So yo, world, I hope you're ready for me. Now gather round, I'm the new fool in town, and my sound's laid down by the underground. I drink a bottle of Hennessy you got on your shelf, so just let me introduce myself. My name is Humpty, pronounced with the umpty. Yo, ladies, oh, how I like to funk thee. And all the rappers in the top 10, please allow me to bump thee. I'm stepping tall, y'all, and just like Humpty Dumpty, you're gonna fall when the stereos pump me. I like to rhyme, I like my beats funky, I'm spunky. I like my oatmeal lumpy, I'm sick with this. Straight gangster Mac, but sometimes I get ridiculous. I'll eat up all your crackers and your licorice. Oh, yo, fat girl, come here, are you ticklish? Yeah, I called you fat, look at me, I'm skinny. It never stopped me from getting busy, I'm a freak. I like the girls with the boom. I once got busy in a Burger King bathroom, I'm crazy. Allow me to amaze thee. They say I'm ugly, but it just don't faze me. I'm still getting in the girls' pants, and I even got my own dance.
The Humpty Dance is your chance to do it all.
Come on.
Come on, I do the Humpty Hop.
Check me out, y'all.
I do the Humpty Hop.
Just watch me do the Humpty Hop.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm doing? Doing the Humpty Hop. Come on.
I do the Humpty
Hop.
I do the Humpty Hop.
People say you're Humpty. You're really funny looking. That's alright, cause I get things cooking. You stare, you glare, you constantly try to compare me. But you can't get near me. I'm giving more C, and on the floor B, all the girls, they adore me. Oh yes, ladies, I'm really being sincere. Cause in the 69, my Humpty nose will tickle your rear. My nose is big. I'm not ashamed. Big like a pickle. I'm still getting paid. I get laid by the ladies. You know I'm in charge. Both how I'm living and my nose is large. I get stupid. I shoot an arrow like Cupid. I use a word that don't mean nothing. Like Luke did. I sang on Do What You Like. And if you missed it, I'm the one who said, just grab them in the biscuits. Also told you that I like to bite. Well, yeah, I guess it's obvious. I also like to write. All you had to do was give Humpty a chance. And now I'm gonna do my dance.
The Humpty Dance is your chance to do the hop.
Come on. Sexy lady,
do the Humpty
Come
hop.
On,
I'll do the Humpty hop. Hop.
Sexy baby,
do
everybody, come on and do the Humpty
hop.
Oh, do you know what we're doing? We're doing the Humpty hop, y'all.
I'll do the Humpty hop.
Watch me do the Humpty hop. Ah, yeah, that's the break, y'all. Let me know that bass groove right here. I do real, do red, do real, do red. Ah, yeah. Now that I told y'all a little bit about myself, let me tell you a little bit about this dance. It's real easy to do. Check it out. First I limped to the side like my leg was broken, shaking and twitching kind of like I was smoking. Crazy, whack, funky. People say you look like MC Hammer on crack, Humpty. That's alright, cause my body's in motion. It's supposed to look like a fit or a convulsion. Anyone can play this game. This is my dance, y'all. Humpty Hump's my name. No two people will do it the same. You got it down when you appear to be in pain. Humping, funkin', jumping, gig around, shaking your rump. And when a doodoo chump punk points a finger like a stunt, tell him step off, I'm doing the hump.
The Humpty Dance is your chance to do the hump.
Everybody!
I do the Humpty Hump.
Come on,
I do the Humpty Hump.
And we are back, kicking it off. Well, first of all, we're here with we'll do real quick intros because we have a lot to talk about this week. We're here with Sam Barrett. Sam Barrett, what's happening?
I feel so young right now.
Like, that's a good feeling. Embrace that.
I was like so lost for a second. I was like, what is going on? Okay, well, I'm here. Hi.
We're here with Moore.
Now we know that like Digital Underground didn't necessarily filter down through to like the younger generations of specifically punk fans.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Actually, that song was the Humpty Dance. I always thought it was Freaks of the Industry, but it's the Humpty Dance. So we just played the Humpty Dance. It's a great song. I'm not sorry. Moore, Humpty yes. Dance. Where do you stand on the Humpty Dance?
Same boat as Sam. I've never heard it, so I will listen to it because it sounds really interesting. But yeah,
how I envy M. Moore. She's yet to experience the glory that is Hallie. Imagining hearing Digital Underground for the first time and having that blessing. Imagine that.
I have that about so many things where I'm like, oh God, I just wish I could listen to this for the first time again. I have so many, but I wouldn't say that Digital Underground is on my short list, but I do have many things that I wish that about.
So listen, first of all, people, I realize I compliment myself a lot and the podcast a lot, and I really mean to be pulling back on that, but actually I've got a project I'm going to announce pretty soon, and I'm going to double down on complimenting myself. But that being said, Sam, M, Hallie, I'm feeling so good about the Punkish podcast right now. I mean, I really think we're kind of kicking it. We're up in the ante. We're getting better at social media posting, thanks to Hallie. Hallie's doing a great job. Hallie, should I be posting on my social media too? Because I saw you posted on your social media that the podcast is up. Should I post on my social media, you think? Should we up our game?
No, way I did that. I actually got together with friends the other day. Imagine that. We were still outside, but it was like nice to see friends. And I mentioned something about the podcast and they all looked at me like I had two heads. They did not even know that I was doing the podcast. And I was like, I guess I've not done a good job of even telling my friends that like this is something that I'm doing. So I was like posting about it, not even so much as to like promote that episode or even promote the podcast, but just to be like to my friends, like just so you know, I'm doing this and I like it. Just if you want to know what I'm up to, you know what I mean? It's like, I mean, I that was really like my main aim and posting about it. I don't think that each of us needs to be posting on our personal like social about each episode. No, unless there's like when you're super psyched on, maybe you want to.
Fair enough. Also, M. Moore is doing a great job posting about it on the website. So great job to M. Moore for that. And Sam Barrett, my partner in crime for 10 or 15 years. I always DM Sam like, I'm so mad at this person. Not people. It's always publicists. I hate publicists. I'm like, Sam, I hate this publicist. I know they've got somebody on the take. I hate them. And Sam's like, you're right, John. You're right. And I know she's thinking John's psycho and needs to shut up. But she's like, you're right, John. You're right. So Sam Barrett, my long-term partner in crime.
Sometimes you're psycho, sometimes you're not. You have valid feelings. I get that.
So anyway, I'm feeling real good about the Punk News podcast. We've got some bonus episodes that we just posted our second bonus episode, our second recent bonus episode where I just play a bunch of new tracks. I think Hallie, Sam, and M, they might be doing some bonus episodes too. So we're up in the game, we're up in the ante, and we're going for it in 2021 in the Punk News podcast. So that's so I'm really psyched about the Punk News podcast, and I'll try to stop complimenting ourselves like every week, but man, I'm psyched.
We should turn you saying Punk News podcast into a drinking game and see what happens.
Punk News podcast, Punk News podcast.
Everyone's drunk. Okay.
There was something else I wanted to talk about, but I can't remember what it was. So let's hit the mail. You can always use the podcast at punknews.org. This is from BJ. This might be a divisive letter. I'll let you all respond. You mentioned that it might be too soon to start planning summer and fall shows, but we are ahead of the vaccination schedule. Plus, larger bands are already booking shows. So unless we want to wait until 2022, independent bands need to get moving on summer plans now. There's one thing for being cautious, but you can't be so cautious it costs you at the expense of Live Nation. It might not be the best scenario, but we can't sit for too long. That's from BJ.
I mean, yeah, right? I mean, you know, he's got a point. You know, like, I think let's book these shows. And then, you know, we also just have to see what's up with the science over the summer. I think it's fine to go ahead and book the shows as long as people are willing to, like, if it's looking like that's not a good idea to be doing gatherings like that, as long as people are willing to pull back or reschedule stuff. I mean, as for me, I think once I'm vaccinated, which will be next week, I would feel comfortable going to shows. I'd probably maybe still wear a mask. Maybe I'd still wear a mask if I wasn't feeling totally comfortable. Or if it seemed like, you know, the powers that be are telling us that that's still a good idea. But I don't know. What do you guys think? I think it's okay to be like booking stuff for the summer and then we see where we're at in the summer.
Well, I think it's more complicated than just book a show because we're dealing with a whole bunch of states and or countries, right? I was like that have different schedules or different amount of people willing to vaccinate, right? And, you know, or different rules, regulations, laws, whatever you want to call them, in, you know, the capacity. So it's, you know, it's not as easy as, okay, I'm just going to do East Coast run and, you know, it's going to happen because I can have like up to like 50 people in each venue, right? Plus, if like, you know, bigger venues, sure. Like I think bigger venues are getting the go to have events, but with, you know, safety protocols involved. But like, you know, smaller venues, is it even profitable to open up to have a show
you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to, like, pass the buck and, you know, have everyone, like, go the baseball route where you have to, like, pay for, like, a string of tickets? You know, like, a $30 ticket that would normally be a $30 punk show that Sam would go to might now become, like, a $60 venture. Like, you know, do I really need to spend $60? That's almost like spending $60 to go see Backstreet Boys.
But think of all the dollars you didn't spend last year.
Yeah.
You could, like, pay, like, twice. I mean, you know, listen, obviously people have been financially hit quite hard by the pandemic as well. But if you're someone that was able to, like, keep your job, I need to first off say that I agree with everything that you're saying. just to the being willing to pay $60 for a show, like, maybe I would be. I didn't spend anything on shows last year. That was my only point. I'll shut up now and let you keep talking.
Well, you know what? I also think that it depends on, you know, what we're dealing with our savings right now. Like, you know, I was like, yeah, some of us possibly in our 30s may be saving for actually buying a house in New York, which is hard. You know, like things like that, like, you know, or not traveling because, you know, I can't go anywhere anyways. but, like, you know, like things like that. So, yeah, like we were spending all of our money on buying vinyl from Discogs because, you know, stimmy checks are real. So, like, you know, there's all of these things. And I think that it depends if you can actually book it, you know. It depends if you have venues willing to do it, because, you know, we still have spaces like maybe a sushi bar that would normally have punk shows because that happens in Richmond. like, you know, they're probably not open right now because they can't have people inside or, you know, whatever the circumstance may be. Or even in Philly. I was in Philly recently and a lot of, like, the known, like, venues aren't even open right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it. This is from Jules. You talk about obscure bands a lot, but have you ever avoided a well-known band because you knew they were bad, but then you actually listened to them, they were great? I avoided My Chemical Romance for a long time. I didn't know they were like Queen meets Green Day. They're now one of my favorite bands. Is there a bigger band you avoided and found out you were wrong about? From Jules.
I like what I like, and I am not ashamed of liking awful bands and great bands. So I'm very comfortable with that.
I'm so glad that person found My Chemical Romance. They are the best band, and they get so much hate, and I don't understand it.
And what's the starting point for My Chemical Romance?
Well... the that, heavy side says it all.
I'm just trying to think, because, like, they're all so, it's like, where do you want to kind of start? You know, do you want to start with something like super theatrical, or do you want to start with something like that's kind of I'd say start with Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge, because that one's my favorite and it's really, really good. And then listen to their first album, which is I can picture the cover. I Brought You My Bullets. So listen to that one. And then listen to Danger Days. And then listen to the Black Parade last, because it's really, really good. But I know a lot of people won't listen to the band because of the Black Parade. So listen to that one last. You also have to listen to Conventional Weapons, which is like the collection of singles and stuff. And it's really, really good.
Well, there you have it. Hallie Bullet, any entry into Jules's game, if you will?
A big band that I avoided and then was like, this rules. Yeah, I think I might be in the Sam camp of just like, I like what I like. I mean, I would say like I had that with like not punk. That I like went through a phase where I like thought it like to be punk, I could only listen to punk. And then very specifically, I remember like a friend got tickets to like a Tom Petty concert like a lot, like this is like a while ago, like a long time ago, like decades ago. And I remember that I was like putting up kind of a stink about it because I kind of saw him. It was like right around that he'd put out that like that album with like Last Dance to Mary Jane. It was like very like it was like 90s stuff that I like wasn't like that into it. And I like kind of put up a stink about going to the show. And then like I went, have I talked about this on the podcast before? Cause this was like a life changing moment for me.
I don't think so.
I like went to this show with like all this like punk snot, like skepticism. And then just like the band hit the stage and just played like one song after another that like I actually loved. Like I'd forgotten how much of their stuff that I just like actually love, like Refugee, Breakdown. Like they're playing all these songs and I'm like dying in the audience, like loving it. And so I think that, I don't know if that's like exactly the same thing, but yeah, I would say there were like big bands that I, as like a 90s punk, I thought were like cheesy. And then because they weren't like the very tiny genre of shit that I was defining as cool at the time. And that like once the dam broke on that, it like totally broke. And I was like, oh, there's like all kinds of other music I could and should be listening to. Like, what am I doing?
Well, there you have it. You can order that podcast at punknews.org. Somebody play a song, and we'll talk about a lot of wide-ranging type of articles. Who's going to play a track? Sam, play a track.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so I've been doing a thing where I'm playing Asian bands, so I'm going to continue that because, you know, why not? So this is a band called Treecoat. They are from Kyoto, Japan. They're a three-piece. Females, they're really cool, they're math rocky, they're on Top Shelf, so this is Melon Soda.
Up our news, we had a pretty crazy story. So as everyone knows, I think it was on January 6th, A bunch of far-right wingers stormed the U.S. Capitol and actually got inside the Capitol in an attempt to block the counting of the electoral votes. Quite surprised, well, actually not surprisingly to some people, John Schaefer of Iced Earth literally led the charge into the Capitol. He was caught and arrested, and he's recently pled guilty. He was charged with 6 counts, but he pled guilty to 2 charges: obstruction of an official proceeding of Congress, which I'm surprised there's actually a law that specific, but I enjoy that there is, and trespassing on restricted grounds of the Capitol. I'm surprised that's a crime too, but I'm glad there that is. While armed with a deadly or dangerous weapon, damn.
They thought both, of everything.
They really did.
Both charges while eating a cannoli.
While being a member of an aging, overly technical band that disguises their lack of ideas with overly complex musical arrangements. Both charges can lead to sentences of up to 20 and 10 years. He could get 30 years, but under the plea deal, he's going to probably get between 3.5 to 4.5 years in prison. Almost everyone has quit Iced Earth except the drummer, and the only reason that he, quote, hasn't quit is just I think no one's asked him, and I don't think he, like, issued, like, a thing. So I'm quitting Iced Earth. I just think he's, you know, because he's only been in the band a couple of years, so he's not even, like, a main Iced Earth guy. Perhaps most, not, also surprisingly, is he's turned informant in that he has agreed to totally cooperate with the prosecution and give them information about the Oath Breakers, of which he's a member. Not Oath Breakers, Oath Keepers, of what Oath Breakers is a hardcore band. Oath Keepers, of which he is a member of, and also information about Proud Boys, if he has any.
Now officially an Oath Breaker.
He is an Oath Breaker. He broke his oath. And all of this was kicked off because someone was looking at CBS News and they saw the guy, they saw a picture of him, and they're like, that's John Schaefer from Iced Earth. I think not that many people were surprised by this because all these guys, you know, carrying the AK-47s around in public because they're allowed to, and all these guys that are acting tough and say, you know, I'm a patriot, you know, when the great collapse happens, I'll be prepared. These guys love scaring grandmas at grocery markets, you know, carrying an AK-47 in a grocery store because that's where shootouts always happen. But when it actually comes time to get heat, you know, facing actually, you know, gunfire or going to jail, these guys flip like that, you know. So it really goes to show how tough they really are. It's one thing to scare grandma at the grocery store, it's another to actually put your ass on the line. So I really think it underscores the type of mentality all of these dudes are. There was some interesting commentary in the Twitterverse from people like Dee Snider and of Twisted Sister, who we go to whenever there's any kind of political discussion. Dee Snider said
what's Dee's take?
Dee Snider was saying that it's absolutely disgusting to try to, you know, block a congressional hearing or anything like that. But then he said, that being said, it's even worse to totally turn rat on your friends and family and try to save your own skin to put them in hotter water. Hallie Bullitt, were you surprised by John Schaefer turning the state's evidence? And what's your take on the Dee Snider statement that no matter how wretched you are, you shouldn't flip on your friends and family?
I just think it's, I mean, listen, I think it's, I don't care. Like, I don't care. I think it's so crazy that people are like, well, like, now he's a snitch. Now I really have no respect for him. It's like, well, you still had some respect for him? Like, it didn't, like, your respect for him wasn't, like, out the window when he was, like, the founding member of a white supremacist group that then tried to, like, overthrow the government? What a higher opinion of him were you still holding on to that you're disappointed by him now that he's flipped? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I just was sort of like, who cares? Like, this guy is dog shit. Am I supposed to be upset that he's now, like, turning in other pieces of dog shit? I don't care. Yeah, this guy's already done to me. But, you know, I guess I understand what people are saying. I mean, I think it'd be nice if the guy was actually feeling some remorse and that was behind his actions, but I think that's probably naive of me to even put out there. I don't know. What was your guys' take on it?
Well, so the Capitol riots, I was watching it unfold on my television because it was literally like on every channel and it was the scariest thing like ever. I think I was so full of hate just by watching them go crazy, you know, that I'm with you. I really could care less what happens to this guy. Like, you know, the fact that he's now going to be ratting out people, right, just tells me his character, right? He's not a person that, like, yeah, totally. If he actually felt remorseful for the things he did, not wearing a mask, being one of the first people to storm into the building and possibly doing all sorts of crap, you know, then maybe we might pay attention a little bit more. But the fact that he's just, I guess, helping others find the other, like, the bigger problem, right? And then he's probably going to be getting, like, witness protection program or whatever. I'm just like, really? I was like, do we really need to spend our American dollars on this? like feed him to the wolves, let him go. Like, it's totally a different story. Like, if he's willing to give information just for, you know, a lesser sentence, fine. Okay, fine. But now we're investing a lot of money in someone's protection just because, you know, he's willing to talk and give information or whatever. Meanwhile, there's, like, an entire huge list of other people that were either, you know, now arrested or found or caught or whatever, that also did bad things that day, you know? Yeah, I don't know. I'm very conflicted and torn about this in weird ways. I really could care less about this dude. I didn't care about him before, still don't care about him, so it's fine.
Em, how do you feel about snitches?
In this case, I think you should sell them all out, because, like, you know, again, like everyone's been saying, like, it speaks to his character, you know, and just what a piece of shit. You know, like, I know that this isn't how it works, but just, you know, if they were like, oh, yes, tell us all the information, and then still gave them, like, 30 years, you know, wasn't like, oh, yeah, you get a pass. It's like, no, you get the exact same. We just got more information out of you. Also, I don't understand why, like, the drummer doesn't just quit, because it's like, the band's not going to go anywhere. Like,
I'm with you, Em. Like, what would be so hard? But would it be that hard for him to be like, oh yeah, P.S. also I quit? Like, yeah. why is he what's preventing him from doing that? I also sort of am raising my eyebrows.
I don't unfairly malign. It could just be that he doesn't have a social media presence, and so no one really knows. You know, like, he hasn't posted a statement, I'm not quitting Iced Earth, but he hasn't posted a statement that I am quitting Iced Earth, you know, whereas the other members have said we're quitting Iced Earth, so.
Got it.
Well, it could also be that, like, you know, they don't want to completely say that they're done, but I can't see that, like, you know, all of this information is already out on the internet, including our site, right? I was like, Iced Earth, like, I think anytime we hear Iced Earth, if you were in a fringe, like, you know, scene, right? You're going to immediately go to this guy, and there's going to be, like, a bad cloud over it. Like, guilty by association type of thing, you know?
You know, whenever these kinds of things happen, like, you go back and, like, you see if the clues were there. And a lot of people actually, like, I don't really follow Iced Earth, but a lot of people, like, follow him, like, pretty closely. They're like, yeah, he's been kind of spouting some wacky stuff for a while. But he also had a side band that he started in 2011 called Sons of Liberty. And at the time, like, no one was like, yeah, it was Sons of Liberty, whatever. And now you're like, oh, you mean in that context. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I will say it has a who gives a shit. I give a shit, and that it really does underscore these guys' mentality in that, like I said, they're all tough guys when they don't face any real opposition. But then when things get hot, they turn into little babies. And that really just shows who you're dealing with, you know. When there's 30 of them with machine guns storming, you know, two cops that are, like, there for the day, not even cops, security guards that are just getting a paycheck, they're tough. But when they, you know, face against real danger, then they're like, oh, please don't hurt me, I quit. So that really shows who they are.
It's a really good point, especially since they're, like, clearly, like, their attitude on that day was, like, I would give my life for this cause. And it's like, but don't send me to jail.
Here are some titles from Sons of Liberty's album: Don't Tread on Me, False Flag, Our Dying Republic, Indentured Servitude. It almost reads like a white power record. We the People. It's like, man. There certainly is a desire, I guess, to say, erase this guy from history, throw him in the garbage. But on the other hand, maybe we should keep him around for the discussion and to better understand these kinds of things. You know, who's to say? I don't know. But here's a guy that never quit either, but in the positive sense. Jeff Rosenstock is back, and he released a surprise record on 420. The surprise release was a record called Ska Dream. And, of course, Ska Dream is a complete re-recording of the No Dream record, except for now it's all ska, and it has a ton of collaborators, including Jer Hunter of Ska Dream Network, Rick Johnson of Muscle Plug, Lars Stevenson, Aura of Leftover Crack, Barboso, Sean Burnett of Andrew Jackson Jihad, George Clark of Death Heaven, David Combs of Maximilian Ensemble, Chris Farron, Augusta of Cayetana and Gladdy, Angelo of Fishbone, Franz Nicolay, who else here? Mike Park, Pup, Anika Pyle, and a whole bunch of other people. And the reaction to this record was nearly unanimous on the Twitter. I'll just say it. Is Rosenstock is a great musician. I was a huge fan of Bob music industry. When he became Jeff Rosenstock solo, he sort of traversed from punk, if you will, to indie rock. And that, you know, Pitchfork covered him, Consequence of Sound covered him. They all kind of acted like they had covered him all along, and they really hadn't. But that's kind of when Rosenstock solo, which is actually a band, it's mainly him. It's the guy from Hard Girls. His name is escaping my mind right now. Mike Huguenor. Who else is in the band? Oh, John DeDomenici of Bond Music Industry, and the drummer is the guy that hangs out with Mike Parker. I'm forgetting his name too. Anyways, he's a nice guy. So Rosenstock kind of like became like cool indie rock, honestly, and you know, he got covered by Anthony Fantano and all the cool indie people liked him. And part of that is because a lot of the people that were young punkers were now 30-ish. Indie rock people by then. And famously, ska has been a maligned and ridiculed genre. But of course, this past year, ska has been making somewhat of a comeback with bands like We Are the Union, with bands like Jer, with bands like Bite Me Bambi, Cat Bite. And who's the big one that I'm forgetting? Kill Lincoln.
Lesson Jake.
but I mean, like the cool new ska bands that are coming, you know, are up and coming. And so people have been very uncomfortable with that. It's like, well, is ska cool now, or is it as crappy as it always was? And no one was unclear. Rosenstock comes along and says, I'm doing a ska record. And quite interestingly, the entire indie sphere said, this is rad. And my question is it rad because – I dig this record a lot. I think it's cool. The question is it rad because it actually – is ska done well, where a lot of ska is done poorly, badly? Or are indie people kind of – admitting just following the crowd? I don't know. Hallie Bullitt, what do you think?
I'm really not sure. I'm with you. This is confusing. because like I don't know. Like I also like, you know, when we would talk about these like up and coming ska bands on the podcast, my attitude was always like, well, isn't that cute that they're gonna like try to make ska come back again? Right? And then Jeff Rosenstock does a ska album, and I'm like, oh, they might actually pull this off. Like, ska might actually be cool again. But I also, you know, the thing that I'm not sure how to feel about, and the thing that I think is complicated, is like these very same people that are like, oh, this is cool when Jeff Rosenstock does it. I don't think that they would give positive reviews or positive press to any of the like youngsters like trying to you know, bring Scott back. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Like, I, so yeah. That was just that people are just like, that would suggest that, quote, cool people are just seeing what other cool people are doing and saying, oh yeah, that's cool. Correct?
Yeah. I'm finding it a little confusing. I'm very, very curious to see what happens in the ska movie. The ska's big third comeback, the sequel. I'm very curious to see where this is going now. Where's the plot going?
I will give Rosenstock credit, is that even though he's cool, quote, cool, I should stop dwelling on cool, but it is a dynamic that exists a great deal in music, especially now. Even though people said Rosenstock was cool, he mostly brought his friends with him instead of turning his back. So he still has Mike Park. He still has Franz. He still has R of the Slackers hanging out with him. He takes Dan Posthase from MU330 on tour with him. So I think Rosenstock has handled his career pretty well in that respect, and I will definitely give a tip of my hat to him. And what's your stance?
This rocks. It's so good. It's so good. And yeah, I agree completely. It's nice to see like Jeff Rosenstock keeping everyone around him, like, you know, who helped him out, not just like, you know, being like, oh, I'm more popular than you now, and just kind of, you know, shoving him away. So that's good to see too. And there's so many guests that it's so good, and pops on two tracks actually. Because I saw that. But yeah, no, it's fun. It's good. I hope that, again, I don't know if this is going to happen or not, but I hope that the people who are kind of like the indie folks, and they hear this because they're like, oh, I like Jeff Rosenstock, and then they find out the ska thing, I hope they give like the up-and-coming ska bands a chance, because they are really good. And, you know, like, it's really interesting music, and it's fun, and it's, you know, it's really good. So they should give it a fair shake instead of just writing it off.
So, like, you know, I've never really been into Rosenstock. I'm like the 1% of punkers that don't really listen to him so much. But I really do love the fact that he does not care, and he made a ska album. Like, even though, yes, this is a ska album of reimagined songs of his own songs, right? But I was like, the fact that he did this, because he doesn't care, I think, is great. Like, you know, he comes from, you know, all these other bands that he was in before, you know, they're very festy bands, right? And, you know, he's coming back to this, and he's bringing all his friends, because it really just shows his character. Like, he is a genuine human being that is here to uplift all of his friends and everyone around him that wants to be around him, you know, instead of bringing them down. And I have seen Rosenstock a couple times live, and would have to say that he does put on a damn fun show. So, if I could totally see this being some kind of, like, weird, crazy, like, special that you, like, you know, pay for to watch during the pandemic, hopefully soon, you know, like, with all of these guests and all of these, like, weird things happening, I would totally pay money to see that.
Yeah, I think you hit on something, Sam, like, that goes back to what John was saying, which is that I do think he's just so genuine, and he does what he wants, and I think that that's what makes him cool. And I think that's really rare in music, that there's someone that has just absolutely stuck to, like, what's in their heart. He has never tried to be anything other than exactly what he is. And, like, he commits so hard that is what makes him cool. He's not following trends. He's setting trends. He's, you know, like, so it, you know what I'm saying, John? It's like, because I do think the cool factor does come into all music and all people that cover music, like, the cool factor is such a huge thing. But I do feel like he's just this absolutely beautiful, rare instance of, like, he's just cool because he's him and not because he's trying to be anything else. You know, I find that, like, so just, like, fucking beautiful, man. You know, it's, like, awesome.
Well, when, you know, like, a lot of these people have been with him for years, like, you know, I would have to say 10 plus years, like, you know, and usually, like, if you have friends for 10 plus years, like, you're a good person. It's not like you're cycling through people all the time, you know? So it's, and even if the, any of these people, which I do think that some of these people do listen to ska, like even if some of these people don't listen to ska, don't care about ska, the fact that they're willing to contribute to a ska album just because he's into it, like, cause you know, that's what you do for friends. I'm like about that at least.
Well, they have it. Let's talk about another radical reworking. Croy and the Boys have released a cover of Crass's Do They Owe Us a Living. You say, John, what's so special about a band covering Crass? Bands cover Crass all the time. Well, this is an alt-country band covering Crass, and they released a video with people not square dancing, but kind of honky-tonk dancing, and it's off an upcoming EP called Do They Owe Us a Living, which finds the band doing six covers of punk, anarcho-punk and punk classics in a country style. I have very strong thoughts on this. This was very divisive. Who wants to kick it off?
You kick it off if you have such strong thoughts. I want to know what these are.
I thought it was great, man. Like, I thought this was really great. Like, it's always interesting that, like, so I'm going to be a dick here, but so many people just don't get it. So many people just don't get it. I saw so many older anarcho-punkers or older punkers or guys say, I'm punk, I love punk. Well, what do you do as punk? Well, I listen to punk and I go to my job. But they're like, how dare they do this to Crass? Meanwhile, the Crass guys and girls, women, men and women, the Crass entities, they love when people do this kind of stuff. Even when it's Penny Rimbaud has been vocal about this. He's like, even if it's bad or unoriginal, I'm still happy people are doing it because at least they're trying to be creative. And I just think this is, I mean, honestly, like, I usually, all country can get too cutesy-wootsy and too self-aware, and I usually hate it. I didn't hate this. I thought this was fantastic. Like, I think part of it is just because the music itself is so well done, and the music itself is such traditional, I guess, semi-modern honky-tonk. It's kind of like 70s honky-tonk, but it's kind of modernish country, too. And so I just thought this was extremely well done. I thought the video was cool because the video has, well, let's see. All the people in the video actually are kind of punk, but they're also kind of country, which was cool. And I like how it's not overly professionally done. Even the film quality is very good, but the actual dancing and it looks pretty organic. But I think one of the – A, this is cool, and I actually bought the tape as soon as this came out, and I'll be excited to check it out. I thought this was clever and funny and good, but also this underscores a point that I've been pressing for years now. Penny Rimbaud is the man. Penny Rimbaud is fantastic. He is great. But people always – now, many people always say Penny Rimbaud is Crass. The important part of Crass is Penny Rimbaud. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Penny Rimbaud is one of the very important parts of Crass, but he's not the only important part of Crass. Steve Ignorant, even though he's the lead singer, even though he founded the band, he doesn't always get – people usually defer to Penny. However, Steve Ignorant, he has incredible lyrics. He's able to kind of do – I don't want to say poppy, but kind of more direct, more punchier stuff. And so a Penny Rimbaud lyric would not be able to bend around a country song like this. Meanwhile, a Steve Ignorant song is able to be permutated or bent into this song. And honestly, like, if you'd never heard the Crass song before and you heard this, you'd be like, wow, that's a cool country song. And that goes to show how powerful Steve Ignorant's lyricism is and how good he's at writing songs. And also, it also goes to show how important the dynamic is. Steve is very, very working class or even poor class, where Penny Rimbaud, solidly middle class, and he's a hippy-dippy guy. Meanwhile, you've got Eve Libertine and G. Voucher, who are very artsy. And you've got all the different members of Crass. They all make it their own thing, and we really shouldn't discount any members and any member contribution. And I'm not saying that Penny Rimbaud claims credit because he doesn't, but people assign credit to Penny, even though he doesn't necessarily ask for it. So this just goes to show how great Steve Ignorant is, and I thought this was cool and clever, and I dug it, and I liked the dancing.
Yeah, I'm with you. This was amazing. This is awesome. Like. And what it really made me think about is how, like, at their roots, like, country and punk are both, they're the music for the underdog, you know? And I thought it was, like, insane how believable these lyrics are as country lyrics. Like, it's like you were saying, like, if you didn't know the Crass song, you would not think twice about these lyrics being in a country song, you know? I mean, they had to change the chords around, right? Because the chords of the original song are just, I don't think you could make like a traditional country song out of them. So they had to sort of change the chords and some of the song structure. But the lyrics are just so perfect. It's like seamless, really, from punk to country. And I agree with you. The video is great. It's like really well done. It just sort of shows the sparseness of living of like a certain of a class of people that have been that like, you know, the powers that be have kind of turned their backs on them. And yet it has like this hopeful quality too, right? People are dancing, and then they did sort of like tie in a punk thing, right? There's like people skateboarding in the background and with some graffiti, but it's like, that sounds corny, but it's just really not. It's just like, it's just well done. I thought I'm with you, John. This is great.
Why, like, I usually hate cutesy wootsy all country stuff. Why isn't this corny and annoying? Why is this so good? You know what I mean?
I mean, I guess listen to enough alt country that I'm sure so much of it is bad, but like, I do like country music in general. So I don't know. I liked this because it reminded me of the country that I like. Maybe I just don't have enough exposure to the country that I wouldn't like.
Sam, what'd you think?
I'm not into this. I'm not into alt country. But I would have to say, like, you know, the fact that they went and covered a Crass song, which is, you know, really not alt country at all, really shows how, like, well-written and possibly timeless, I guess, the lyrics are, because it transitioned so well into another, you know, in another genre. When I listened to it, I couldn't even tell that it really was a Crass song. It was really encapsulated into this alt country, you know, but I really think I like when other bands do the covering of things, because you really don't know sometimes, like, you know, what influenced the band. So it's actually interesting to me that Crass potentially was like influenced this band somehow. And, you know, they felt compelled to cover it.
And what do you think?
I thought I was going to hate it, but I ended up really liking it. I was surprised because... Well, again, I agree with the lyrics. They translate so well, and it sounds really good, like in another style that you wouldn't really think about, like automatically. But I think the thing that makes it so, like, the people who are in the band, like, they seem very authentic. They seem like this is what we, like, we agree with the sentiment of the song. You know, we're covering it because we believe in it and all that. And I think that's a really good quality to have in a band, especially when they're doing something outside of what people would expect from them. I think it's really interesting.
And speaking of another Texas based band, Pleasure Venom had released a music video for their song "We Get What You Deserve." The video was it's off their self-titled EP. They released a self-titled EP in 2018. This is off their upcoming album called Pink Pony and more. Pleasure Venom, what's your stance? What do you think of this video, and why is this band important?
This band kicks ass. They're really good. They have such a unique sound, and they're so full of energy. The lead singer, Audrey Campbell, like, her voice is really, really powerful. And again, we go back to the authenticity thing. You know, like, they care about the music, they care about what they're producing, and they care about the message that's going out along with this. So, like, when they release the song and the video, they have a huge write-up along with it. But part of the write-up is If we choose to... Oh, sorry. I started on the wrong line. The time to prioritize race issues in America and across the globe is now. So it's a very political song. It's a very political video. It's an important message. They released a song earlier this year called Fascist, which is also off their upcoming album. And that was all about Donald Trump. So, yeah, if... Because I spent a good portion of the day trying to figure out how exactly to describe their sound, and I can't really. So I'd say go and listen to them, because they are a very unique experience. Did you guys have thoughts on the band video?
So this is the first time I've heard of this band, and I was actually very into it. Like, the message is there. I was like, I'm all for it, you know. She looks like, I just love when there are colored punks in this world doing a thing, and it just brings me so much joy, because there's not too many of us out there, you know. Yeah. And you know, and I just love the fact that she does not care, and she's just putting it out there. Like, I'm definitely going to check out this new album. Like, you know, this is definitely going to be something that is up my alley in at least checking out. This video, I think, was fantastic. It's, you know, a whole bunch of clips of things, and then just her doing her thing, looking like a damn Beyonce goddess, you know, so I'm about it.
John, was this for you? Were you into this?
I was into it. I wasn't crazy about it. And here's why. I think the video is real cool. And I definitely like how she subvert, like, listen, it's cool to wear the backpack and all black and the metal studs, but it's been done before. I definitely like how she's subverting that look very much in the early or mid 70s punk style, which wasn't even subversion because punk didn't have any rules yet. So I definitely dig how she's dressed up like a queen, and then like she's got like all these different outfits. And I really like her Ronnie Spector hair. I think that looks really cool. I like the track. I love how it's got kind of like an anarcho rip to it, particularly what's that band? Dehumanization is the album. Oh my god, the only American band on Crass Rec, Crucifix. The band Crucifix, and I think that's really cool. The one thing that I think it might be missing, and maybe it's just a personal preference, is I don't really hear anything to latch on to sonically. Lyrically, it's there, but it's, you know, just the riff snapping forward and her like screaming and ranting lyrics, which is cool. And many anarcho bands do that. My particular taste is I wish there was just a line that I could snag on to that would keep looping it back around to keep the momentum going. So I think it's very good, not great, but I do say this band's got lots of promise, and I'm definitely going to check them out in the future when the album comes out.
Yeah, it's funny, like, John, I like, musically, I probably, like, prefer, like, in fact, Em, I think you played, didn't you play Death? Didn't you play that song on the podcast a while back?
I did, yeah, that's off of their self-titled EP, which is also really good, and everyone should check it out.
Okay, like, I think, like, for people like John and I, where it's just, like, there is part of me that just, like, I just want to hear a hook at some point. Like, musically, like, Death is, like, I love that song. That, to me, is, like, musically what I would love to hear, like, more of from this band. But this, like, but you cannot deny how powerful this song is as a statement. I mean, just, like, what is the first line is, like, getting tired of living this shit. It's, like, so good. It's so fed up. It's so appropriately angry. And like, and John, I thought it was interesting that you like mentioned how she's dressed. I don't know if I like read too much into it, but it's like, the song is definitely about like the people that, you know, the people that oppress, the you know, that basically that the people who oppress, they are the ones who deserve to suffer. And yet what happens is the people that they oppress are the ones that actually suffer. You know, the populace, everyday people. But I thought like she's dressed as like a queen and like maybe like a judge, like right when she's in front of the podium, it kind of looked like she was supposed to be a judge, but like also like a demon dominatrix. You know what I mean? So it was like, I thought it was like, it was, she was sort of dressed like a dominatrix, like she's this cruel ruler. Like she was, I sort of read into it, like she's dressed like the people that she's singing about, but she's like turning it on her head because she is a woman of color and she is singing, you know, she is clearly singing for the people that are being held down. So yeah, I was like, I was super into it, but John, I get what you're saying. And like, do, I don't know if you, like, if you don't remember it, maybe go back and listen to Death and see if that's like not musically more like what you're like wanting to hear from this thing. Cause that, that to me is like the shit that like, I just, I could listen to on repeat, like over and over again.
Yeah, I'll check it out. My interest is definitely peaked. So this band is definitely been a watch out for. Somebody play a track and we'll come back.
I'm telling you, I can never, you always keep me. Every time I find a band that I like, you have like, you've already covered them, you've already written them, you've already played them. It's amazing. No, I really have so much respect. You like have, you just find so much good new music. But I have only just discovered a band that you already know about, which is Hospital Bracelet out of Chicago. I'm like loving this, you know, album that came out earlier this year. I think this band has such an interesting sound. To me, it's like Lemuria meets like Braid meets like something super current and like indie rock, like a Julian Baker. I mean, that alone, those are like three totally different artists. And like, I do feel like this band has like little pieces of all that stuff shoved in. And I just really like when I can hear like a bunch of different influences in people's music. And so, yeah, I'm super into this track. It's called Sour OG RBG. And it's off this South Loop Summer album that just came out earlier this year by Hospital Bracelet.
The world doesn't follow the rules of your stupid fucking card game, Zach. Get used to it. Campaign, of course. I was an NPC and you were the DM, and it all comes down to the fact that this was never meant to happen. When you told me you didn't love me like I love you, it was a critical hit. Yeah.
And that was Hospital Bracelet doing their ode to a very important Supreme Court justice. Let's talk about a guy that had justice served. This is the story of Billy McFarlane of the Fyre Festival. Of course, as listeners know, the Fyre Festival was this, quote, luxury music festival where people were supposed to get flown out to an island, and like Blink-182 was playing and a bunch of other bands were playing. But it turns out that Billy McFarlane lied about loans that he had gotten to get other investors, and so none of the bands were played, or almost none of the bands were played. So a lot of the bands didn't show up, and the island actually hadn't been prepared for a festival at all, and there wasn't any food for people, and there wasn't any place for people to go to the bathroom or stay, and it was a total disaster, and people literally had to be airlifted off the island in an emergency response. Billy McFarlane pled guilty. I think he got about 4 years sentence. So he got about 4 year sentence, 6 year sentence, and a lot people that bought tickets filed a class action against him. That class action against him and the entity that he controlled for the Fyre Festival. The class action has settled, and roughly each person that bought a ticket will receive $7,200, which more or less concludes the Fyre Festival matter. Meanwhile, Ja Rule, who was a promoter of the Fyre Festival, literally sold a NFT tweet for $80,000. There's a lot to take away from this. Sam Barrett, has justice been served, or have the scammers won in the end?
So when all of this stuff was going down, right?
Sam, don't you love this picture of Billy McFarlane walking down the street?
Oh my God, I love this picture so much because it just encapsulates like some paparazzi nonsense. You know, don't look at me. Oh no, no, you're a douchebag. Anyways, I was like, so the fact that you're I was reading up on this because, like, you know, just to refresh my memory about how stupid and awful this is, I was like, the fact that you bought a ticket to go to some luxury, like, festival in some stupid island somewhere with all of these people billed, right? And the fact that all of these supermodels, like, were paid to do, you know, whatever endorsements or commercial or ads or whatever to go, and then, like, because of things that kept on compounding with the fees and whatever, then these people were asked to front money because they were like, oh, we're not taking cash and we're not taking credit card. Like, I think it was like up to like $300 to $500 a day just so that they could sustain living there for however long the weekend is, right? I'm like, wasn't there like big red flags that went off, like, for a normal person, you know, and I'm a normal person that don't have a lot of money, I would have been like, are you kidding me? So the fact that this happened, okay, what do you expect? This guy clearly is a scammer. Now you're getting $7,200 out of it. Okay, fine. I think they could have gotten more. But, you know, they went into a class action, so, I think someone else, like, did sue him directly and got, like, a few thousand dollars more or something out of it. But, yeah, I think this was a scam from the start. I think everything happened this way for a reason. I think Ja Rule, like, literally got away with, like, clearly all of this, he skirted under it somehow, because it did sound like he was, like, you know, one of the people that was actively involved in the beginnings of this. I don't know where he was, you know, when all the scamming happened, but, you know, I do find it hilarious that he sold an NFT for $80,000, because, you know, NFTs. I think we had an entire discussion about NFT.
He was cleared of any, like, criminal wrongdoing, right? But clearly, like, he should feel bad about what happened. I mean, I don't know that John, did he make the money from this NFT? I think the guy selling the NFT Maybe I misunderstood. The guy whose tweet it was the one selling the NFT, but it was sold on Ja Rule's platform, which I would imagine means that he's getting a cut of it. Am I misunderstanding that?
You probably, honestly, I didn't read the article that closely. I saw an opportunity to ding Ja Rule was making money off this, and I took it. So
he is. I don't know that I do think that if it's being sold on a platform that he runs, then clearly he is making money off of it. And I'm with you. It's tacky. It's just it's so dumb. It's so tacky. he wants to say like, oh, I was scammed. I was scammed by the guy running this festival. I was just asked to promote it. And he's been able to legally back that up, I guess, in court. But, you know, this move, I'm with you, John. It just kind of shows he is just kind of a scammer. You know, whether intentionally he was scamming people when it came to the Fyre Festival or not, this just shows a complete lack of remorse for what happened, and yeah, just like an opportunism that I don't personally admire. I don't know, like, but I like that you just wanted it. Do you have a beef with Ja Rule? You just wanted like a thing you could say.
I don't care about Ja Rule one way or another, really. I'm not a fan, but I'm not an anti-fan. But I did think it was, as you said, tacky for him to even host this on his platform to make money off this. When he was involved in the debacle. Although I've got not a hot take, I'll say a lukewarm take. Yes, these people got scammed, but you know what? Who cares? Like, it's mega rich people, like, purposely buying a mega rich experience from some shady guy, and Ja Rule's making money off him. I don't really care. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, and not to say all rich people are evil, but people that tend to buy these stupid things tend to be evil. And I'll also point out, this just goes to show how the justice system isn't really that equal. I'm all for Billy McFarlane getting 6 years in jail and being a scammer. Maybe Ja Rule should be a little bit more trouble too. But remember, we had the guy from Newfound Glory got like probation or whatever for sex crimes. Like, it is interesting that if you scam people out of money, you got to go to jail for 6 years. Sex crime, you know. Just be nicer next time. You know what I mean? And it just goes to show, you know, what's more severe, sex crime or stealing money? I think sex crime is more severe. But as we see, that the punishment is much greater when you scam people out of money. And you know, there's that whole leftover crack and Michael Parenti thing, or choking victim Michael Parenti thing. I don't really agree with the fundamental idea, but there is traces of truth to it with what Michael Parenti says. There are people that think that the point of the police is protection of people. No, the point of the police is social control and protection of private property. And that does kind of seem that way here, you know.
Capitalism, baby.
You know, like, honestly, like, well, check this out. I'm going radical here. Radical. I hate these people that scam old people with the phone scams. My Uncle Jack actually got scammed by these, renew your car warranty, or do you want to subscribe to this magazine for free and then we'll bill your credit card $700 a month? You know, evil, evil, or fake Medicare and Medicaid. Evil people, the lowest of the low. Low people, they know they're scamming old people. They know they're scamming lonely people. They know they're scamming people with dementia. They know they're scamming poor people, because that's who gets scammed by these stupid things. Evil, evil, evil people. I hate them. If I saw one of them in the street, I would beat them to unconsciousness. I truly would if I knew that that was.
They almost, with your aunt, your Uncle Jack. Hell, I know, yeah, you're going to beat them.
so evil people. Does the DOJ go after them? Do those guys get locked up and have to pay back all the money they stole? No. And they're stealing from poor people. But, oh, you scam a rich person out of a super fancy ticket? We got to get our money back. You know? So,
well, that's the thing. That just speaks to how unfair our justice system is.
Yeah.
I was like, the more money you pump into it, the more they're going to hear about it.
I don't know if I can co-sign with that, but I would agree that there are hints of truth to that, and perhaps truth to that. I haven't come to a conclusion myself, but that symptom does seem to arise here, and it is a bummer. Let's talk about something that's not a bummer. This is a Sam Barrett thing. Sam Barrett, tell us all about this new compilation for AMH, the AMH compilation.
Yeah, so, you know, I live in Brooklyn. It's a thing. We frequent going to Long Island every now and then. So there's a rad little spot called Amity Music Hall that has been having independent shows for actually years. It's a cute little spot. It's next to a really good brewery. So, you know, right now we're in the midst of a pandemic still and things are still closed. So, a whole bunch of Long Island bands banded together and created this compilation so that funds could go directly to the venue. And so Crime in Stereo recorded a new track and put it on there. There's songs by Iron Sheik, Victory Garden. There's a couple of covers by bands I don't know of, but they sound cool, so I'm into that. It is 34 tracks of Long Islandness. So yeah, I'm really into the fact that bands and people are putting things together to help save the spaces that we love and, you know, need them to thrive so that after we're done with this pandemic, we have somewhere to go. I guess. Yeah, go check it out. It's cool.
It's a good comp. It's a really good comp, right? Like, first of all, that Iron Sheik song is so good. I think that's from their,
it's from a split.
It's from a split with Toys That Kill. Yeah, that song's amazing. And I even liked the Death Cab for Cutie cover. Like, I thought this comp was great.
Yeah, I really dug it, and I really, you know, I'm just right now, all of my expendable cash is going towards saving these spaces right now because we need them. I was like, I don't want to see half of Brooklyn closed down or turned into, you know, a Walmart or a Target or something like that. So we really need to do whatever we can to make sure that these spaces are there. And I'm really, really excited about this Crime in Stereo track. Like, I really hope that they actually make do something because they've been, you know, dead for a while. So,
well, we're running a little long. We're going to hit two stories. I think we'll save Hears till next week, unless anybody specifically wanted to talk about Hears this week. So we'll say that till next week. I do want to cover that though, but let's talk about the Dictators. The Dictators are back together, or are they? The Dictators released a new single this week and a video too. It's called "Let's Get the Band Back Together," fittingly, and it includes Andy Chernoff, the main songwriter of the Dictators, along with Ross the Boss and Scott Kempner, all Classic Era members, and also drummer Albert Bouchard of Blue Oyster Cult, which little do people know, Blue Oyster Cult actually has several connections to punk rock, as well as Frank Zappa. However, not on this recording, Handsome Dick Manitoba, who, of course, has feuded with Andy Chernoff for years and years and years, although they did release a record together about 5 or 6 years ago. But the past few years have been relatively rough for Handsome Dick Manitoba. He's had some legal problems. Manitoba Bar was shut down, and he was fired from his job for drawing a Jewish star on a Palestinian person's desk at work. And it was a whole thing. And so we've got the Dictators now for the first time on record without Handsome Dick Manitoba. I thought this song was really good. I dug it a lot, and it does go to show how great of a singer and a songwriter Andy Chernoff is. But despite the problems of Handsome Dick, I'm not sure that it truly is a Dictator song without the edge and the over-the-top bravado and pro-wrestling stance of Handsome Dick Manitoba. Hallie, what do you think?
Nope. I say nope, nope, nope. I mean, listen, he proved that he can still write a song, and he always could, and he's still a talented songwriter, but I don't think you can have the Dictators without Handsome Dick. You can't. And also, just as an aside, having met both Chernoff and Handsome Dick, I can tell you that Handsome Dick is a gentleman and a scholar, like just a fucking outstanding person, and Chernoff is a dirty old man who hit on me when I was 25 and he had to be like at least 45. I was like so devastated because I was like so into this band that I like ran away from that encounter just being like ick. So I say listen, my personal experiences aside, I just say no to this because I just don't think you can have a Dictators release without Handsome Dick. I don't think you can do it. That's my personal take.
Yeah, his name isn't the band, isn't it? The Dictators. I mean, that's kind of the thing. Sam, Dictators. Are you a fan? Or you don't? But you're from New York. I bet Sam isn't a fan, even though she's from New York, which is paradoxical.
You know me so well, John. yeah, I'm not a fan. Yes, I'm from New York. I do remember, like, you know, being I guess a teenage punk, going to, like, you know, spaces like, you know, CBGB's when they were closing. Yeah, I know. I just dated myself. Anyways, yeah, like, you know, seeing Dictators, like, you know, the, like, posters on things, right? I was like, so I know they're a thing. I wasn't about this track. I did think it was kind of cheesy, the fact that it's Let's Get the Band Back Together, as, you know, they're kind of doing this reunited thing, but not really thing. Yeah. I don't have much to say. Sorry.
And what's your stance? Is Em there?
Did we lost her!
No!
Oh, Em, yeah, Em is gone. Well, I'll try to bring her back on the call. In the meantime, let's... maybe we'll do this some other time, but maybe we'll talk about when you meet a musical hero and it sucks and it's not awesome. And when you meet a musical hero and when it is awesome. One thing I wanted to mention at the top, we'll talk about briefly right now, episode 550 is right around the corner. So we need to think about what we're doing. We did a call on episode for 500, and I don't think we can ever top that. So I think we should do something different. Maybe a game show, or maybe the long-hinted story time is what we should do. At the end, at 550. You guys have any thoughts on what we should do for episode 550?
We should do a game show!
A game show? All right. Let's do a game show.
I was going to say, we should do story time! But the good news is that whichever order we do these things in, there's genuine enthusiasm for all ideas.
Well, maybe we should do – I mean, I definitely do want to do story time, but I definitely like game show – maybe we'll do both. We'll see. We'll see. We got a lot of options. Here's the last story we're going to talk about today. I have a feeling that Sam and Hallie are going to be repulsed, disgusted, and hate this track. It looks like Em might not come back. So if she doesn't come back on, then we'll see Em next week. I think maybe her internet cut out or something. But listen, Big Moose Man Holinkin released a new video. It's called Surfing Herd. And you might not know who – at first I thought Big Moose Man Holinkin was one guy, but actually I think it's three guys. It's a guy called Slade who runs Captain Crook Records. It's a guy called Ryan Manhole who was in the band the Man Holinkins, and he's got a bunch of solo stuff too. And it's got one other guy. And their big thing is they do somewhat Ramones core tracks about being bronies. And they've literally released over 100 songs about it. You think you get tired of that theme after like three or four songs? They've literally like written like over 100 songs about being bronies and brony type activities. And you think, oh, well, they're like 14, but they're not. They're like 40. And I have like 7 Big Man Holinkin, Ryan Manhole cassette tapes because they're only $3. And I just think they are perhaps one of the only truly outsider weirdo art. And we discussed them about a year and a half ago. I really don't know if these guys are in on the joke or not. And when you watch this video, it really does seem to be like a little creepy. You know, it's like grown men like playing with My Little Ponies on the beach. And if you read the lyrics, like I don't know much about My Little Ponies, but when you read the lyrics, they're like they clearly know a ton about My Little Ponies. So it's not like they're like truly fans of My Little Ponies, or they've read enough to know about My Little Ponies to really talk about them all the time. So I think, you know, one of the great things about early punk is it was dangerous and weird. Most modern punk really isn't dangerous and weird. And you could say there's some benefits to that and some detriments, you know. And there are benefits and detriments to that. But it is interesting to get something that is truly weird and edgy and perhaps dangerous. But you don't want to get into that area where it's too dangerous and is truly unwholesome, you know. And I think Big Moose Man Holinkin walks on that fine line very closely. I could definitely see these guys being dudes that are just pushing the joke a little too far. And I could see these guys being actual creeps. And I don't know one way or another. Sam and Hallie, what is your stance on Big Moose Man Holinkin? Weirdo, good time, fun, that kind of sucks, but it's kind of awesome. Or creeps being creeps, and we should stay away.
John, I have to reevaluate my relationship with you. The fact that you have 3 cassette tapes.
I've got like 7.
Okay, 7. I don't know if we're friends anymore or, like, you know, we're just going to have a working relationship now. this is weird.
Sam, these cassette tapes are so weird. Like, in these days, it's pretty easy to make a good-sounding recording with GarageBand. These tapes still sound like they were recorded in a boombox in, like, 1985. Like, the vocals fly in and out. It's really muddy. You can't make it. Like, there's weird sound effects, like, put in at the wrong places. It's something else.
This video was weird. This was weird. I literally, when this came out, I was like, what the heck is this? Because I've seen weird stuff. Like, you know. I've seen a lot of weird stuff, a lot of weird performances, because, you know, I'm artsy-fartsy and stuff like that. But, dude! No. I think they might have crossed the line a little bit. I questioned what I was looking at, whether or not I needed to call the cops. And now I'm questioning our relationship, so thank you.
It's almost like a Silence of the Lambs type video, right? That's something Buffalo Bill would send out, you know what I mean?
I don't even want to talk about it anymore because it's just so weird. Hallie, do you have anything to add?
What I want to add is that I keep trying to forget that this band is a thing and that bronies are a thing, and John Gentile keeps reminding me over and over again. I don't know what to say about this. I get what you're saying, John, with like that it's punk and that it's, is it dangerous? I don't know. It's just, the music is just like pretty like bland and derivative, like Ramones core, right? So musically, there's like nothing really dangerous about it, except as you referenced, like how badly it's recorded. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say about this. It's like, it's not, this is like not good. It's like not that interesting to me, but I do get a good chuckle every time we talk about it on the podcast. So yes, no, you know what? I give you permission. Keep reminding me that this is a thing.
I wonder, will this be the Daniel Johnston of 2040? That's what I'm saying.
No way.
who played a song so far? Sam, you played a song, right?
Yeah.
How did you play a song?
I did play a song.
Then let's play Big Moose. No, I'm kidding. Let's play Croy and the Boys covering Crass, something everybody agrees on. Well, actually, no, that's right. Sam hated it. Here's a track that Sam hates. Hey, Croy and the Boys. We'll be right back to wrap this bad boy up.
To the politically minded, here's something I want to say about the state of the nation and how they treat us today. In school they give you shit, they'll toss you in a pit, and you try to get out, but you're stuck in it. If you're different, they bust your head. Could care less if you were dead. They'd rather see you drop out than get ahead. Well, do they owe us a living? Of course they do. Owe us a living? Of course they do. could care less what the people think. They keep us watching TV so we don't think. They treat you like a target for what they want to sell. And if you don't want it, oh well. Well, do they owe us a living? Of course they do. Owe us a living? Of course they do. Of course they do. Owe us a living? Of course they do. Owe us a living? Of course they fucking do. Fucking do.
And we're back, and sadly, M. Moore is back, is gone, but she'll be back next week, just like Frosty the Snowman. Sam Barrett, any closing words for the listeners? Anything we should look forward to 550?
Continue to wear your mask. Continue to wash your hands. Don't be racist. And let's hope for something weird.
Hattie Bullitt, any final word for the listeners this week?
No, because the band that I played their song, because Hospital Bracelet reminded me of Braid, which was like an old emo band out of Champaign, Urbana, like another like Illinois emo band. I've been listening to like a ton of Braid, and like then there was like kind of a spin-off of Braid that was like Knapsack was like a really good emo band. So if you're like feeling like some old, if you're in the mood to dive into some old emo, like Braid and Knapsack, that's been just like my jam these last couple of days.
Well, there you have it. Some emo recommendations and some not racist recommendations. And you can also reach the podcast at punknews.org, and we'll see you next week.
Just trying to get your attention so you can take a look at this invention. Now peep these, I got some more in my jacket.
Man, what are these, condoms?
Sex packets. It's like a pill, you can either chew it up or like an Alka-Seltzer. Dissolve it in a cup. And get this, see the girl on the cover? You black out, and she becomes your lover.
You're tripping.
No, I'm serious, these are authentic.
Yeah, well, I don't take hallucinogenics.
Wrong again, my man. This is way more real, but since you know everything, I'll make someone else a deal. Packets, got them packets.
Yeah, you can pack
it, man. Packets.
Yeah, you can pack it, man.
Packets, you need packets.
Yeah, you can pack it, man.
Got them packets.
Well, now you got me curious. I'm kind of thinking about buying it.
$3 for $10, it can't hurt to try it.
Well, what exactly do I get?
Well, read what it says. Look at the picture.
Fact. It says Chinese girl, age 17, waist 24, hips 33. This one here says young black virgin. Man, this is crazy. I'm going to have to splurge and get me a few of these things. How long do they last?
Well, it depends. Let's see. These cheap ones here are 10 minutes, but these are extra power. They last about a half an hour, and these here sell for about 40, because you get two girls.
Yeah, it says orgy.
Right, and if you're married, it's no big deal. You're not cheating at all. You're just popping a pill, and if your wife's got a headache and wants to hit the sack, it's cool. Take a packet, fool. Biochemically compacted sexual affection. Now here, take a look at my selection. Packets. Got them packets. Packets.
Yeah, he's
packing. Got some packets.
Okay, I want these two boxes of three. And give me Blondie here. And that one that said orgy. And by the way, I need something for my woman.
Sure, I got guy packets.
Cool, give me some of them.
Now let me tell you how to take it. Either sit or lie down, and you really should be naked.
otherwise you're gonna mess up your clothes, know what I mean? This is more than just a dream, it's very realistic and it's gonna blow your mind, so be careful, only take one at a time, and never take one behind the wheel, you'll black out and hit a pole.
Cool, let's make the deal.
These are 40, these are 80, and this one here's 10, just give me $100, I'll call it even, but don't pull your money out yet, see, there's one or two knots in this area that sweat me. Over here.
Yeah, this looks kind of cool. 20, 40, 60, 80, 100.
Smooth. Here's my number, in case you need to reach me again. And remember, you need to be as safe as you can. There's only one thing safer than using your hand. Dial that beeper number and call a packet man. Packet.
Man, it was like she was really in the room with me, you know what I mean?
Man, I'm gonna make it chilly.
Just listen. I need a couple more, man. I'm kinda tapped right now, but I tell you what, you just hook me up with some, I'll straighten you out Tuesday.
Oh, right? Nah, man, I can't front you nothing, man. I'm sorry, man. I can't handle it.
Come on, man, I'm good,
man.
Man,
I'm sorry, you know what I'm saying? I can't work it, man.
All right, see this TV right here?
Oh, man, here we go, man. I got enough TVs, man.
It's cool, man. Brand new, man.
I just paid $500
for that TV.
Man, I can't handle TV. What about her?
Man, that's my wife, man.
Man, that'll work.
Nah, man.
You know what I'm saying? I can't mess with these things myself, man. I don't get high on my own supply.
I tell you what, that VCR right there.
Man, if I get another VCR, I'm going to hurt somebody.